Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Hi, Nana. Welcome to What You Read Next podcast.
Thank you for having me again. I'm so excited to be here.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I write sexy feel-good romance, in this case, spies and royals and bodyguards and all things fun and adventure. I've been published for 11 years now, and I just released my 98th book. I want to say 98. I think 98. Yeah, it's 98. and if you love like romance and adventure and those fun kind of like romancing the stone, Pierce Brosnan, Bond keeper type books, then I am for you.
I love this. First of all, how do you write so many books? Like, do you keep file the ideas? Like, do you have like a file maker of ideas, or like they come to you and you're like jot it, and then like produce, you know? Do you take breaks? I mean,
the idea pile continues to grow, because one of the best time for ideas for me is when I don't want to edit. So sure enough, my brain is like, oh, but this other project. So that what I usually do is, if it talks to me a lot and it won't go away, I'll let myself write 500 words of it and I'll stick it in a folder. But usually it's like, I'll be in the shower and I get an idea and I'm like, oh, but what if, and then I keep a pad like right outside on the shower on the tub, and I'll just like write all this stuff down. But I mean, I've been published for 11 years. So, you know, my very first book that's not published for good reason, that was really terrible, took me 8 years to write. And then the next book took 6 months, and the book after that took 3 months. And I've gotten considerably faster since then, once I understood kind of like what story construction is. And what, you know, conflict, motivation, and goals are, those little details. Once I understood, I could practically see the story and knit it together just a lot faster. So, you know, sometimes it takes about a month to draft if I'm going at like a slower pace. And then, but usually it's 2 weeks to a month. If I'm going fast, it's about 2 weeks. And then it takes about a month to edit. So I can keep up the clip pretty quickly. And sometimes I'll, like, it's not ideal for me, but sometimes I'll write two at a time. But that's to, you know, that's because I've said yes to a project and people need it delivered. And then I was like, oh no, but this other thing. So sometimes that happens too. But yeah. And you know, I don't go any days without writing. Even if it's 500 words, I've discovered that for me, if I can just write a little bit, like even on vacation, then my brain stays fresh, because what will happen is, if I completely stop, it's really hard to start again. Really, really hard. But I mean, that's how I do it. I know there are people who are actually faster than I am, but I don't know how they do it, because sometimes my brain is like, we're done. I'm so tired. I'm exhausted.
Well, it's okay. I think it's like exercise. Like, you, once you do it every day, then you get better at it. You do like you have the habit, it just forms. Like, writing is the same thing. It's like a muscle. You're just writing. And then it's just like, it's easier and stronger, and it's, you know, faster for you. So, And so you write for, like, I would say for TV, like cinematic, you know, like fun, they're easy. They're just like, they get you going. They're like, there's moments where there's spies, there's heists, there's stuff, there's a mystery, there's like a real, like, it's like a TV writing for books. So did you have some TV background, or was it something that you just like, this is how you develop your muscle, and you're like, this is how your voice came about, you know?
I love that you said that. Thank you. And because that is exactly how I see myself, is I wish I had TV background. That would make my life a lot easier. No, but I grew up watching all these shows that I love, you know, that, like, you know, like Queen Latifah's back as the Equalizer. I used to love that show as a kid. McCall, you know, an old guy who helps people. I love anything that's got action and adventure and there's a mystery involved. I used to watch all those old school soap operas that I had no business watching when I was a kid. you know, Falcon Crest and Dallas, you know, I was like always like hanging on to the stair banister, like over, leaning over. I mean, no wonder I didn't break my neck or an arm, because I was in the most precarious position trying to watch this thing. But I would be so enthralled. And then what would happen is at the end, sometimes something would be solved, but most of the time they'd clip you. They'd leave you wanting more. And sometimes it was on you, didn't you? Someone almost died. You know, same for soap operas, like they keep you coming back. Like that's the whole point. And I used to love the show called Remington Steele as I aged myself. I was very young, I swear. But I used to watch that, and I would love that kind of like bantery, funny, but like there's action happening and there's a mystery to solve. But then like at the end of every episode, you were left going, ah, and then you were desperate to come back the next week. And that's excellent. I mean, that's the purpose of TV writing, to keep you coming back. You know, outside of the episodic kind of situations, but those ones with like the longer storylines, that's the whole idea. And so when I started writing kind of the things I love to watch, I guess. And so I love that someone recognizes that I'm doing that. And I'm like, you guys know, it's like a TV show. Like, are you like, do you see what I'm doing? So thank you for seeing me.
It just reminds me of like high stories. Like it's the stuff that I love about TV when I binge watch, or even binge watch. And you remind me of like telenovelas growing up. Like this is where I grew up with, like just stories that would just keep me going and going and going and watching. And like, I must watch. And and sometimes like nothing happens, but major things happen. Like, it's like this whole push and pull about the romance, like, you know, romance maybe on the low, but then all this mystery, all this action, all this plot is happening. That just keeps me going. And so your books are that, like, you create a world that you're actually like, that's gets you going and makes you addicted to your books. Like, once you read one, you want to read them all, you know?
Yes. Tell that to everyone. Read them all. There are many books. Start. I don't even know where to tell people to start anymore. Start at the very beginning. Game, set, match. Just move your way up.
Awesome. So let's chat about The Spy in 3D. What was the source of inspiration? Like, but first of all, what's the elevator pitch and what's the source of inspiration?
Okay, so elevator pitch is take Mr. and Mrs. Smith, amp up the sex appeal and make it kind of, they're not married and they're accidentally dating, and you have the spy in 3D. So we have two competing spies working for two different spy organizations, and they are matched on a dating app, and obviously they can't tell anybody anything about who they really are. So you have these people dating who are lying to each other left and right, and having to sneak off of a date to go on missions. It's really that kind of fun Pierce Brosnan Bond kind of caper. And then they end up crossing paths several times on missions, and you know, they're all like geared up. So they're like, wait, this guy fights familiar. Like, I feel like I know him. And it's really this kind of like fun, energetic, just like, if I loved the show back in the day, La Femme Nikita, I love anything La Femme Nikita. I love the original movie. I'll even let The Point of No Return, I'll give that a slide. But that Maggie Q, now I like Maggie Q, but that Maggie Q La Femme Nikita nonsense, I'm sorry, but no. The original La Femme Nikita show, which was a Canadian show on USA, with Peter Wilson and Marie Dupuis, that was the business. The sex appeal, like the two were just like constantly, it was like that, the show was all sexual tension. Like, honestly, like you think about the missions and you're like, that mission didn't make any sense. Like, this did not hold up over the years, but the sexual tension still carries the show, because you're like, oh, Michael and Nikita, oh my God. You know, that like Alias vibe where it's like Sydney and Vaughn, and you're like, you're watching for that. I mean, I was. Forget the missions, forget the mystery. I'm watching for the will they, won't they, what's gonna happen situation. So really that's those things that I love are all crammed into there. And then of course you've got your spy gadgets and, you know, your hidden holsters and all the fun equipment, you know, the Kevlar that's like paper thin, as if, of all the kind of things that you can dream up of, like gadgetry and fun, I certainly included in The Spy in 3D.
I love this. And this is a Kobo original. So tell us all about this specific partnership, because this is a unique partnership that, you know, we only see in.
Yeah. No, I'm super excited. When Kobo approached me and they asked me to do an original, it's actually a duet. So anyone who knows me should not be surprised. There's a cliffhanger in it. Sorry. But they approached me to do a duet. And then, you know, they were very clear. They were like, look, you know, you write in this kind of fun suspense vein. We love it. We want, that's what we're asking from you. I'm like, great. That's perfectly in my wheelhouse. Awesome. And then they're like, you know, we would like the heroine to be a woman of color. And I was like, even better. That's my wheelhouse. Bring it. And then I got to really, and they said, other than suspense, a really good cliffhanger and a woman of color heroine, go wild. And so I could do whatever I wanted. But the other thing they asked me was to not tie it to any other world. Because me, if anyone who reads my books knows that I Easter egg the hell out of all my books. So if you start in one series, you're going to be like, hey, I know this person. Or they're going to have a piece of art, you know, from someone in another series. Or like, I do that all the time. I take you back and forth. And if you're paying attention, I really should link them in the books. But if you're paying attention, I Easter egg everything. So you can be introduced to characters that you may not know. And so they said that this was a standalone world, that this is just a Kobo world. So that allowed me some freedom. I didn't have to think of all the rules that I've already established. I mean, when you get out your story Bible and it thunks and you're like, oh boy. And you know, there's a set of rules, there's a set of characters, and you have to remember names and you're going through. That can get a bit much to keep in your head. So an all new world to just kind of play with. And it was an adventure. I mean, as I was writing, I was like, this is great. I don't have to remember anything. I mean, I'm making a new Bible, but I don't have to like think about who got married. When did they have a baby? How old is that baby now? Like all that other stuff that comes with having an established world for such a long time. So that was really fun. And, you know, and the partnership has been great because one thing I've always said is I want readers to find me. It doesn't matter how you like to read, where you like to read. I want to be available for you to find me. And for me, a lot of that means a lot of international readers as well. Mm-hmm. Kobo's huge internationally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, me being from Ghana, I'm like, listen, anything that supports international readership is a really big deal because I think a lot of authors, we get a little bit myopic. Like, I mean, granted, if something works in the States, chances are it'll work elsewhere. But like people kind of forget about those auxiliary countries. And I'm like, look, I have like 30 sales in South Africa today. That's great. Like, I always find that fascinating and really fun. And Kobo allows for that. And they really make huge pushes internationally, which was really great for me. So the partnership was definitely a no brainer.
Oh my gosh, I love this. And you were the cover model. So tell us a little about it. How did you decide? You're like, you know what? It's gonna be me. And how's the photo shoot, like the whole styling, the whole process of cover models? You know, you're the first cover model that I'm interviewing, so I'm really excited.
You know, I've done some cover stuff before, and primarily originally when I first started doing cover stuff, it's because of a lack of diversity in stock images, in all honesty. Like, that's really it. I mean, I've been around, you know, since the Paleolithic era of romance, and when I go to stock images, I will see some of the same photos that I saw way back then, and I'm like, we can't update these? There's no photographers taking stock of like brown women. And the thing is, you when you're, I think a lot of readers don't know this, but as a romance writer, when you go, you need a romance ready cover, which means either a woman alone, a man alone, or a couple together. And those photos are already far and few between to find, and then few and far between. And then to have like an image of a woman of color in an intimate pose. And I always say, I feel bad, but then I don't feel bad. But like the guys don't really matter. You know, when I decided to write, my mission statement was to feature as many women, brown women, marginalized women as I could in my book. That was my main focus. Do I write non-melanated women? Sure. Cause everyone has friends and, you know, I have a really rich, dense, diverse world, but primarily it's women of color. And so trying to find a woman of color that matches the heroine, that's in a clinch. And like I always say, the guys are interchangeable. I'm like, I've written Latinx heroes, I've written white heroes, I've written black heroes. Like, I'm like, the guys don't matter to me. I'm equal opportunity fine. And so I'm just like, and interchange. And to make that pairing, to find that perfect photo is, you, I mean, like needle meet haystack. And so one of the difficult things, again, finding women of color, but then finding women, in my case, like I write about sometimes dark-skinned women. I'm like, in this country, I'm considered dark-skinned, though not in Ghana, where I'm from. But most of the women, the Black women that you'll find are biracial, are fair-skinned. And I'm like, well, she's beautiful, but she doesn't match. And so I was, you know, originally I was looking for those kinds of things. And my friend, a photographer, Wander Aguiar, he was like, you know, you instead of complaining, why don't you fix it? And he like threw down the gauntlet for me. And for a couple of years, I said, no, I was like, I'm not a cover model. Just stop it. I'm a writer. I'm going to sit behind the scenes where I want to be nice and comfortable, you know, eating my Oreos, not eating kale. And he was really insistent. And my husband finally was like, oh, so you're afraid of it? And I was like, did you just call me afraid? What is this? And so I was like, no, I'm doing it. I'm going to do this, you know? Of course, my husband knows how to get me to do anything. Just ask me if I'm afraid. And I'm like, no, I'm not afraid of anything. And so I said, yes. And so I shot with Wander, which was great. And, you know, with Wander, he's so good at his job. He makes you so comfortable. And then all of his guys, by the time I'd shot with him, I knew most of those guys. I'd put them on my own covers or I'd done custom shoots with them before. So like, I'd at least seen them, known them, you know, we'd like interacted before. So it wasn't like me on set with a stranger and being like, guess we're gonna look intimate, I guess. This is weird. And so that made a really comfortable situation. And then the first time I was my own cover model, again, same problem. You go back to stock, you don't see what you need. You look around at other photographers, you know, for the kind of paid photo, which is the next step up from stock photo. And so you're like, well, maybe I'll just buy one. Or in my case, I needed four at the time. And you couldn't even find, most of these photographers didn't even have a Black model in their stable. And I'm like, but how? There are gorgeous Black women. Like, I mean, even in San Diego, the most non-melanated place on the planet, there are beautiful Black women walking these streets. Like, how? Where are you not? What's happening? And then what you're finding is that people, I mean, it's kind of people, it's based on the supply and demand and biases, right? So if your biases tell you, well, I don't know where to find beautiful Black women, so this is what I have available. And then you look around and then you're only looking for what you think will sell. Mm-hmm. Then you're also not taking the extra effort to find women of color to have in your stable. And so I looked around, I couldn't find any. And so I went back to Wander because I know he has Black women in his stable. And the one I wanted in particular who matched and she was of darker tone. And he was like, yeah, she's beautiful. I was like, yeah, no, she's gorgeous. Let's go. I would like a custom shoot and I want to get this. And he was like, well, she's pregnant. And I was like, how pregnant? Like just like a little pregnant, you know? Can we like squeeze her into a ball gown or like really pregnant? He's like really pregnant. And I was like, oh. And then my publicist said to me, she's like, well, you've been on covers before, go do this. And I'm like, no, not on my own covers. I'm on other people's covers because there's a kind of separation. Like when you grow up in this country, you know, there's all kinds of things about the beauty industry and what the media tells you is beautiful. And where I grew up, I was not considered beautiful. And so I have this sort of separation about what I may or may not look like. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and I am the only beholder that should matter. But I also have a detachment. And so I, you know, for photos for other people, that was fine because I'm like, I'm being part of the solution. If someone wants a Black model, there are photos of me, here you go. But for me to be on my own covers is a very personal thing because now if someone doesn't like a book or doesn't like a photo or something, then it's about me, which is terrifying, so terrifying. And there's no separation at that point. But you know, as with most things, like when you bite the bullet and you do it, it turned out fine. And the response was amazing. And people were so supportive and people were like, oh my God, boss move. And I was like, no, I wish I could be like, yes, I'm that fabulous. I'm not. I was solving a problem. Like, honestly, that's the way I approach most things. I'm like, well, there seems to be a problem. How do we fix this? And that's literally all I was doing. Am I thrilled that it gave that, like for young girls, like my daughter, when she's eventually old enough to read romance, she can look at it and be like, no, you can have Black women on the covers and they're beautiful and they're amazing and there shouldn't be any difference. And so I'm happy I can do things like that to give her that feeling. I'm glad that some women wrote to me and they said, oh, you've been, you know, given me so much inspiration to be on my own covers. I'm like, great. But PS, the solution is not for authors to be on their own covers. That is not the right solution. The right solution is for there to be, right?
Yeah.
For there to be like a plethora of diversity on these covers, right? That's the real solution. The solution is not for authors to be like, well, I'll just do it myself. It happened to work out, and I was able to make that happen and solve that particular problem, but that's a ridiculous solution. I mean, and PS, custom photo shoots are the most expensive solution you can come up with. And so the fact that there isn't enough stock photos, the fact that there's not enough, like, just regular paid photos that you can go and buy, which also are very pricey. I'm not going to pretend that they're not. But, I mean, most of the time you're getting these super talented, amazing photographers, and they cost money. They do. But there's not even those available, you know, like some, like Wander, do have some Black models and some Latinx models and some Asian models. So that's great. And you're like, oh my God, thank you. But so many others that I personally reached out to and was like, hey, do you have any? And then they're like, no, but maybe try so-and-so, you know, but we have to solve that problem because we're acting as if there are no gorgeous, diverse women running around. And so for Kobo, when they asked me, we talked about covers, and I know illustrated covers are like the hot thing right now, especially in trad, I think. And they were like, oh, do we want to do an illustrated cover? And I was like, sure. Like, I was like, I'll try anything once. I was like, but I currently do not have any illustrated covers in my other books. Mm-hmm. So if we want readers to make the jump, the cover should match. And right now I have people. And so then, like, I'll never forget Michelle Katz. She was from Kobo. She's amazing. She was like, you could be on the cover. And I was, and as I was saying, no, couldn't possibly. My publicist, Nina, was saying, yes, she'll do it. And I was like, no, not again. But I want to eat Oreos, not kale. But you know, it was funny because this time it was a different photographer, someone I didn't know, I'd never shot with, another model I didn't know that I'd never shot with, makeup artists that, you know, every time a Black woman goes to get her makeup, it's always also like when a Black woman goes to get her done, you're like, okay, do you have a hot comb? Okay. Do you know how to press? And there's a whole set of questions you have to ask the Black woman, like when someone is dealing with your hair, especially that person is not melanated. You have to ask the questions because they're going to be like, oh, sure, I've done hair type yours. And then you look crazy. And so I walked in and I was like, and beautiful makeup artist, and her makeup's done beautiful, but she's blonde. And I'm like, oh boy. But I've learned in the past, always bring your own makeup. And I was like, hey, it's nice to meet you. And I was like, well, I didn't know if you would have any of my shades. Cause that's happened before. You walk into some place like for a wedding or something. And they're like, oh, I don't have your shade exactly. But we'll try and blend. And I'm like, if you don't have anything darker than me, what are you going to blend with to get my color, you know, or for like translucent powder, they're trying to use the white translucent powder. And I'm like, no, that will make me look like Dawn of the Dead. You have brown translucent. And so like, I just learned to bring my own. But what was amazing for me for just the makeup, the thing that set me to my comfort level was she was like, oh, no, I have colors for you. And then she opened up this like plethora. I was like, what? She opened up, she's like, bam. And like, and the best part is those colors had been used. Like they're little tubes. She like, and I was like, you've done Black people before. Oh my God. I was like, thank God. And so she knew what she was doing. And I immediately, like, my anxiety level went down and I could just sit there and let her like, give me like, you know, really defined cheekbones. I was like, yes, who is this in the mirror? This is great. So, I mean, it was really exciting. And that part was really fun. I mean, it was a little nerve wracking because in the middle of the pandemic, and before we went, we all had to get tested, obviously. But then it's like right up until the day I was like, you know, I tested a week ago. Let's do one more test, just, you know, because you want everyone to be comfortable because you're, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to be like this close to someone's face when you're modeling. That's the gig. And so with the pandemic, it was very strange because, you know, under most circumstances, you walk in and you know the guy, you're like, hey, like, I mean, Andrew, I know Andrew, I've shot with Andrew before. And I was like, okay, Andrew, you hug. And, you know, you don't think about it. But now it's like, there's a deadly disease. and we're about to have our faces pressed up close to each other. This is going to be all, you know, so all the safety precautions. But then it was great. They had a stylist, Kobo arranged for a stylist for, you know, for outfits. And so, you know, trying things on. It was a very princess like montage moment. You know, I'm like, this one, you try it on, you come out, and you know, the stylist is there, like, pinned. And he, but P.S., ladies, no dress looks like that, like it looks on a model. You are pinned in to that dress within an inch of your life. That's just what it is. Now I know that. Because, you know, like, they're sitting there making, even if it's not a perfect fit, they'll make it look like it's a perfect fit. And so those kind of things. But it was, I mean, it was great. And the photographer, Brandon Sosa, he was amazing. He's a fashion photographer in normal circumstances. Great. So, I mean, I knew it wasn't going to be a bad picture. And the model, Tim Bryant, I mean, super professional, lovely, really sweet. You know, it's like, I mean, it's always awkward when you're like, okay, now look like you're in love. Stand here. And you have to like, I mean, and for me, every time I'm with someone new, I'm like, oh, okay, oh, this is nerve wracking. And then you're standing there, you're sucking in your stomach, you know, pushing out your butt, trying to create a curve. And you're like, oh, this is very uncomfortable. But all of that, I mean, it was all fun because at the end of the day, I knew that I wasn't going to look bad. Mm-hmm. And so all I had to do was have fun and relax and also try and give exactly the feeling. Since I am the author and I knew what I needed, I knew I needed Mr. and Mrs. Smith vibes. So like, all I had to do was contort my face to be like sexy, sultry spy. And, you know, that was my job for the day. So, I mean, it was really fun. It was, I'm not gonna lie and be like, oh, it was just so arduous. Oh my God. No, it was fun. It was super fun. But there's a lot of things you don't think about in normal times that you had to think about in COVID times. So that was different. But yeah, no, it was a great experience. And I'm glad I got to do it. And I'm glad I met a new photographer who now, you know, I can also be comfortable with and be like, Brandon, can you just come to my house and just take, you know, photos of me just for fun?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I love this. Thank you for sharing the whole solution-based approach, but at the same time, mm-hmm. your day as a princess, your makeover day.
You know? It was really fun. I'm not gonna lie. Like, I was like, why can't these people follow me around every day? God, this is what I need. Glam squad on speed dial. It's great.
I love this. And so actually you had recently an audiobook fellowship going on for diverse authors. Tell us a little about yes. that whole process. You know, what inspired the idea and yeah. like, you know, what the
no. So audio and color. So so as a result of, you know, the uprisings from last summer, I started an initiative called the Brown Nipple Challenge, which really was meant to help people decolonize their bookshelves. Mm-hmm. Because what happens a lot, people, you know, say that they want to read diverse and are like, but look at my diverse bookshelf. I've got these diverse books, but somehow they're never in the mood to read them because they've never read them. Mm-hmm. But then like the latest and greatest from whoever it may be, authors I also love, you know, and when their new book comes out, I also jump to buy them. They run them. They're like, I read it in like 4 hours. Oh my God. I'm like, but you have this book that's been sitting there and you just performatively were like, look at all these diverse books that I have on my shelf. And so I really wanted to like force people to engage with it and stop being performative. And so, and also the other idea was, I was like, look, we're going to put money in women of color's pockets at the end of the day, you know, so that, because without money, you don't have access. You can't run the kind of ads that you need to run to be as super as successful as you need to be. Plus, what happens is the lucky ones. There's when people talk about women of color writing romance, there's maybe 5 or 6 names that get mentioned all the time because we are the lucky ones. Not that these women aren't extremely, extremely talented, phenomenal writers. They are. But guess what? There are thousands of other phenomenal women of color authors who haven't been as lucky, have not, because you're also buying access. So if you are, you know, a woman of color and you haven't had luck or success, much success, then you don't get invited to the table. When people are doing, oh, I'm doing this anthology with such and such and such, you don't get invited because people don't know you're there to be able to invite you. And so all these kind of things. And I was like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to introduce, you know, authors of color writing romance, and it's going to be great. So I started that initiative, and we do it every month. And then at the end, we do a book like a, basically a book club, and we talk to the author. Because when you can talk to the person and talk to the author, you're making this connection. They're real people. Like, you're like, people watch it and be like, oh my God, I love so-and-so, they were so fun. And then they go and buy the rest of their books. Mm-hmm. And for indie authors, that's direct money. Mm-hmm. And that's direct money that they can use for, you know, ads or whatever that it is they need. For trad authors, what that means is their publisher is going to be like, I saw a spike on this month. What happened? And then their publisher is more likely to give them another deal and a better deal, which again, more money going the way that it should. And so when I launched the initiative, you know, I had a lot of author friends reach out, like, how can I help? And I was like, well, share it, do your own challenge. This is how it's done. I mean, it's really easy. Pick an author, tell your people, read it together, host the author. It's the simplest thing you can do. And I was like, yeah, hold your own brownable challenges, share it, make sure you're using the hashtag so other people can find, because people do, like, I find that people do want to read diverse books or have no problems doing it. It's just, they're like, well, where do I start? And I'm like, Google is your friend. Right. Yes.
You just like, you like, you can write down, like, you can put Black romance, you can put Latino romance.
Yes.
Hashtag it. Uh-huh. Like, there's so many different ways. Like, just
so many.
It is really frustrating.
Yes.
From outside of, you know, the majority of the world, yes. Whatever it is.
Yes.
It's really frustrating because it's so easy. Like, I have a platform. I make sure that I have diverse authors because I want to hear the voices, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, I mean, I try to find grace and meet people where they're at, right? But sometimes you're like, Google, bitch, Google. Like, you just, I'm not your Google. It's not our Black romance. I'm up, like, a phenomenal writer. Or like, maybe bypasser. So, and I'm like, look, I get that you feel safe, quote unquote, with these like six Black authors that you know. But there's so many others. I mean, and not just Black authors, but like South Asian authors and Latinx authors. And you know, I'm like, there's so many. So many that, you know, like, that not everyone knows. So, and like, even like, and I, people suggest books to me and I'm like, I had no idea this author existed, you know? And so I get really excited when I can, you know, I'm like, oh, this author, this is great. And then I can share that. So as a result, Lyric Audiobooks, Andy Arndt reached out to me and she said, hey, how do we help you? And I was like, I don't know, share it, I guess. And luckily for me, Andy's really persistent. And she was like, no, that's super cute. How do I actually help you? And so we got on the phone and she's like, you know, one of the first things I noticed is the first book that you did didn't have an audiobook, which is weird because it was a trad book. I think it was Mia Sosa's The Worst Best Man, which the cover was just a delight. And I guess it didn't have an audio. And she was like, I couldn't believe it. And so she's like, I always think, is there an audio? And I was like, and actually I was like, that's a great idea. And she's like, well, we talked about all kinds of different ways that we could amplify voices because she's trying to amplify narrators of color as well. And I was like, you know, this is super important because, I mean, I've been there back in the day when I started and trying to find like a narrator of color and not having a lot of success. And we talked about different ideas and then we're like, you know, I was like, if back when I was starting out, someone had helped me figure out the whole audio thing. And she's like, actually, you know that you've said that. And so then we came up with this grant program. And then she was like, I have a meeting with someone because she used to work in nonprofits, which is lucky for me. And she was like, I have a meeting with someone. They've been talking about wanting to like really, you know, put money behind like this whole push for more diversity. And they really want to like invest money well. And they gave us a grant. I mean, that was really all Andy. I'm not like, I can take zero credit. That was all Andy. And they gave us a grant. And so I was like, wow, we could, with this kind of money, we could get like top tier narrators and do six audiobooks. And so we kind of came up with like the grant parameters and what it had to be. So we, you know, it's really your first self-published audio because a lot of people will sell their rights, which is fine because it's money up front. But most of the time you're not going to make a lot because audio takes a minute to earn back. You're not going to make a lot on the return. So yeah, you got your money up front, but like you could have made so much more money in the long term. And that's money that can help. That's an investment in your career. And so we wanted to be able to do that, to really give authors a grant, you know, to change these six authors' lives and course of their careers. And then a fabulous thing happened. Romancelandia came through, because when we announced it, I mean, it was really overwhelming that day. Like, I had people emailing, and they were in my inbox, and they were like, how do I help? And they're like, where do we give money? And I'm like, stop. We know we have a grant. This is how it works. We have grant money. But Romancelandia was like, super cute. We're giving you money. So we made a GoFundMe, and people, and so we gained another $10,000. And so that allowed us to do two more authors. So eight authors. I mean, just really just, well, that's phenomenal to me, because I remember in those early days, I remember well, and just like scraping together the money to do an audio and, you know, just really being like, oh my God, it's so expensive. And so to be able to give them, and that money's free and clear. So that's an investment. And so when they earn the money back, that's the money that goes into the next audio production and the next one and the next one and the next one. So to really build on their careers. So, I mean, it's been fantastic and amazing. And we announced our eight winners, the grant last week. I forget what week it is. I think it was last week. And I'm so happy. The judges that helped us out were phenomenal. I mean, and we had two rounds of judges, a really diverse panel, which was really obviously key and important as we were talking about diverse books. And people from the blogger space, readers, people who own like audio groups, and really people who do like audio marketing. Because the key thing I was more concerned about was that we not just produce the audiobook and be like, here you go, and then walk away. Mm-hmm. To really, I want to support these authors, because there's so many things you don't know until someone tells you. And that's really goes back to the access. Like, until I had mentors along the way that found me and were like, oh my God, you're so great, but stop doing that. I didn't know. And you don't know what you don't know until you learn. And so I was really thrilled that we're able to give them so much support. And then also like narrator selection, they're going to have narrators that match their stories, which is just, for me, that's phenomenal. I'm just like, I'm so excited. And the thing is, if someone's like, oh, I want this amazing top tier narrator, great. We're going to, like, I mean, usually it's a couple. So we're going to pair them, you know, with narrators of color. I mean, some of the narrators of color are like also top tier, Janina Edwards, Ebony Flowers. I mean, these are amazing narrators that, like, I mean, I know they're there, but like maybe other people don't. So it's a great opportunity to give them some shine and some light as well. So I'm really excited about the initiative. And then I think the first, we're about to go into production right now, at time of taping. And then we start releasing the first audiobooks in July, I believe. And so that'll be the July. And from my end, I'll be supporting with Brown Nipple Child. So July Brown Nipple, we'll be talking to the author about their whole process and why this book and all that kind of stuff. So it's, I mean, it started from this little project that I was doing, and it's grown, you know. Thank you. Thanks so much in part to Lyric Audiobooks. And I just have to say, Katie Robinson from Lyric is a boss, because she like wrangled all the judges and she did all that back end stuff. And we have a great partner in Find a Way Voices, because these audiobooks will be wide and they are giving so much support. So, I mean, it's amazing. And the way the community just like shifts in and dives in ready to help you is incredible.
Love this. I absolutely love reading audiobooks, especially diverse books, books spoken in different languages. Audiobook is the way to go, because you hear the intonation of how the word's supposed to be said, and you just like, feel like you're traveling, like in your, like you're like listening to voices. You're like, I didn't know what is happening, but I love this, you know? So audiobook is the way to go. I had a good conversation with the, an audio sales person from Hachette, and we're talking about the same thing. It's like, you know, especially like Spanish speaking, you know, like when you sprinkle those words, like audio is a great way to consume the material, because you get immersed in it, you know? So
it's a very immersive experience. It's a movie in your ears.
So, yeah. And so I love that. I love this initiative. I love that this is happening and that we're having more diverse audiobooks that we can consume, and they're going to be going wide. So they might be available in a library. They might be available like in different places where you can get it. So
that's that's the whole key. And that's really why Find A Way Voices. I mean, that's why it's so important. And we're really grateful to have a partner like them, because then these authors will, like, you just get better access, you know, for those who are, you know, sight challenged, and to be able to go get it from a library, mm-hmm. And then for the author to really get exposure to, like, all these places and all these channels that they didn't have access to before, that's really, really key.
I love this. So speaking of the Rare Nipple Challenge, I do ask our authors to share book recommendations. And I figure we should talk about some book recommendations. So you can talk some of the greatest hits. You can talk about whatever you feel like it. But I think you have a good selection of books that, you know, can, you know, those who may not want to Google it, you know, although they can also look at the backlist of these episodes, because there's quite a few diverse authors who have come on the show.
Yeah, there's quite a few. We've done like 10 now. I have to go back and look, actually. Let's see, I'll start with the most recent one. Big recommend, Naima Simone, The Road to Rose Bend. It's a friends to lovers, but also it's a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. It's not a secret baby. It's like she knows she's pregnant, and she but like this whole, like, she kind of goes home after, you know, like she's starting over in her life, and returns home to Rose Bend, and then falls in love, right? And I normally don't love a pregnant heroine. I will say this. Normally I'm like, no, but I love secret baby. I love a secret baby, but I don't like the heroine to be pregnant, like, you know. But I loved it. Naima, like, she writes this really like emotionally charged kind of, you just like feel it, and she had this like whole subplot, like familial subplot in there, which was really great. So beautifully written, well done. I really loved Road to Rose Bend. Some of my other favorites, I know this one seems weird, but Taylor Vaughn's His to Claim. It's alien romance, but with brown girls. Yes. Listen, don't cover your eyes. Listen, it was incredible. It's because the thing is, so alien romance, the big thing with alien romance, and I was talking to someone about this the other day, is like the whole point is you get kidnapped from, you know, your world, or taken from your world. And the fact that they did this, so it's Taylor Vaughn, so that's Yvonne and Theodora Taylor. Theodora Taylor is like phenomenal. Like, let me just, if anyone's not on Theodora Taylor, you need to be. I don't know what you're doing, but get your life. So they did this great job where it's like this planet that was like kind of like way beyond Earth. So like Earth part 54 or whatever. But it was a struggling planet, and they had this alien race that, you know, helped them out. But as a result, they had to give over some of their women whenever they turned a certain age, 21 or something along those lines, right? And the heroine in this one happened to be black, and she, at the time of the selection, she takes one look at like whoever, like at the choosing people, and she was like, oh, hell no. And then she takes off running. And I was like, yes, girl. Yes, yes. This one was not going to be a heroine that was going to like take it lightly, you know? And she fought the hero, and she was like, no. But then also, like, you really watch as, like, you know, when, you know, they cart them off, and like, you know, like, instead of him forcing like that, like be like, well, this is going to be great. But like, he kept her, and she was like, this is not happening. Let me just tell you about yourself. This is never happening. But then, of course, they fall in love. That's not a spoiler. That's kind of the point of romance. But I mean, it was honestly, it was amazing. I was like, yes, because someone recommended it to me. I was like, this sounds crazy. But it was everything you love about alien romance. And it was so good. It was really, really good. So that's one of my like secret, like that I was like, this is going to be nuts. And it was incredible. So that one, let's see. I mean, I still love Mia Sosa's The Worst Best Man, because it was like, for me, like having a different culture, like being from Ghana, I am always like looking for like these connections with people from other places. Cause like, as it turns out, you find out we might all be from like different parts of the world, but we all had similar upbringings with our parents, like foreign parents are no joke. And so I really connected to Mia Sosa's work. You know, she's Brazilian, and I really connected that, like, with the foods. I mean, I have a lot of Brazilian friends. So like, I was like, oh, a lot of things I recognized. And I was like, oh yeah, this is it. But then just culturally, just the way her mom and aunt were. And I was like, yes, foreign parents are no joke. And so I really loved, so that one, let's see, let me give one more. I mean, I love them all, which is because I usually read the books before. And it's because I love them that I was like, oh my God, I love this. You know what? I really love, I love Tracy Livesey, but I can't remember the name of the book. Anything Tracy Livesey. Livesey. She is phenomenal. It's part of like her like Girls Trip series.
Yep. I think like Lovers Do. And then
yes, like Lovers Do. That's the one. My brain was just like farting on the name. I was like, wait, what was the title? But I loved it. And you know what? Because I loved it because the heroine was so smart and brilliant and just mm-hmm. so just like she's like a very type A, but then like in her personal life, she's so messy. Like just messy. So like there's a scene, and it's not a spoiler, it's a really funny scene. There's a scene where she's like sexting with the hero accidentally, and I was like, oh my God, I would do this. This is some shit I would do. Oh my God. And so I loved it. It was amazing. So those are probably like my top highlights, some of my favorites. I mean, I love them all because I had them on the show in the first place, but those are probably some of my favorite ones.
For sure. I love this. I've talked to Tracy. So she based her Girls Trip on her real Girls Trip, which I love the fact that she has like girlfriends and she goes on a trip and she's like, yeah, and these stories are like fully based on real life. And I was like, I love this.
And I love everything about this.
Like, this is my jam. Like, I go on Girls Trip, like, you know, I have my girlfriends. Like, this is like fun, you know? So I love this. And
yes.
The name of Simone's the Blackout series. The one they're all black. There's like a blackout, and you're all like hooking up. It's kind
yes.
of it's so good. It's like there's like three books in the series. It's just delightful, you know. So
Naomi Simone, she's got a real talent. Like you just like whenever you pick up a book, and Naomi and I have been like circling the same kind of groups for like years, mm-hmm. years. We've been like all, you know, it's like, oh yeah, there she is. Naomi Simone. So like, I love that she's getting so much love now. And like, I love that, like, she's getting all these great trad deals. She's doing really well. And I love her writing. There's a certain, like I said, there's a richness, like a juiciness to it. Like it's juicy and rich and just like so well written too. Like it's kind of masterclass. It's really well done. And because I normally don't enjoy like small town, like I'm like, oh, please God. But like I chose it deliberately because it was Naima. And so I was like, I really loved it. She's so good. So if anyone who hasn't tried her, like that's the one to try. And like yeah. need to make that one of your seven black authors that you've heard of.
Add another one.
Add another one.
One a year. You can add one a year.
No, one every month. What? I mean, like, just like
every month. I feel like it's so easy. So one every month or a couple every month, you know, like just add more and more. So awesome. So Nana, tell us where you can find you online.
Yes. I mean, I've already been making where you can find me. So you can find me on Instagram, which is where I spend most of it. So at Nana Writer. And then you can find me @nanawriter. And I mean, I'm on Twitter. But I'm not on Twitter. And that's @NotAmAlone. I mean, I may roll onto Twitter, but like, I mean, Twitter is mostly to check my notifications and to quickly reply and share other friends' books. And then I get off Twitter because Twitter is a bubbling cesspool that I can't. But yeah, so those are primarily the places. And you can find me on my website, notamalone.com. And any information you would like about the Brown Apple Challenge, you can get it there because I do list who the Brown Apple Challenge is. And then I post all the Brown Apple Challenge chats also on that page. So you can't, if you miss them, you can always watch the replay. But primarily I'm on Instagram. I'm not on TikTok yet. I mean, I'm on TikTok, but I posted like two videos and I got to find my thing to make TikTok rich.
It's all good. You're everywhere, you know, at the end of the day. You're like you're shaking the world. So you might as well, it's all good, take a break from TikTok, take a break from the Gen
Z. Thank you.
And just take over the world one step at a time.
Yes, I'll do that instead. Yes, absolutely.
So thank you, Nana, for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun. It was good catching up with you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share it with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For book recommendations, author interview archives, and other fun book resources and tips, please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com. The What You Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Network. To discover new shows to listen and love, please visit frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What You Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.